record there. And I think we're good to go. Yeah. Okay.
Sounds okay. Recording. All right. So today is Friday, November 13th. It's about 9:25 in the morning. I am here with Betty Brownlee. She's an artist in the area, and I will be asking her about her time as a long-term resident in the Cass Corridor. So first, I guess, how did you come to live in Detroit and the Cass Corridor?
Well, I was a student at Wayne State in 1971, but it was a cool place to hang out before then, so I was already familiar with the area when I became a student, and it was just a cool place to go. The museum, the DIA, was open, and people would hang out there. There was a restaurant called Johnny's Restaurant, or Johnny's Cafe, which is now, I think, Olympus, or one of those. Anyway, it's on Warren at Cass, so people would hang out there, too.
So did you grow up near here, then?
I grew up in Illinois till I was 12, and then we moved here when I was 12, and I went to school in Garden City.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what do you consider to be the Cass Corridor?
I consider, the old Cass Corridor is sort of extended down Cass Avenue, past the university, maybe a few blocks, and west towards the Lodge Freeway, and probably north or south, that direction, south. Maybe that's where I consider the Cass Corridor primarily, like down towards Martin Luther King, and even further down towards Temple, where the Masonic Temple is. All of that back in the 70s was considered Cass Corridor. It got a little safer as you moved towards Wayne State, and then the campus has always been safe because of the Wayne State police, I guess. Yeah. But it got pretty dangerous the further away you went from campus.
Okay, and so what were your impressions of the Cass Corridor when you first lived here?
I thought it was a lot of fun. you had to keep an eye out, on your surroundings, because it was significantly dangerous as you got further away from campus. But there were a lot of clubs down there. There was Cobb's Corner, which is now Spiral Collective on the corner of Cass and Willis. Yeah. And so that was a place that we would hang out. And then further down was the Gold Dollar, and that was where, the White Stripes used to play there before they became famous. That was really rough down that way. And then, but it was mostly things on Cass Avenue. Alvin's was down this way. It was a popular hangout. Sundays especially, Sunday brunch, but also at night they had music, a lot of music.
And so what kind of community existed in the area?
It was there was a strong sense of community, I would say. There was a lot of political activity. I remember going to a lot of anti-war demonstrations. This is all in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. So there was that sense of community that way. It wasn't like today where you could just text somebody. You would have to, we did have telephones. Mm-hmm. You'd have to call, or some people didn't have phones. You would go knock on their door. And then flyers, posters glued to walls, stuff like that would inform people of where the next demonstration was going to be, or march. There were marches that would go down Woodward, peace rallies, anti-war rallies, race rallies, because it was right after this, most of the rioting, or, I don't know how else to put it, I know there's a correct term for it, but that racial disruption happened in the late 60s, so there was a lot of residue from that left over, and there was a lot of racial tension, kind of like what you see now in Missouri. What's going on in Missouri right now was a lot like it was in the early 70s here, I would say.
Was the community at Wayne State separate from the residents in the Cass Corridor, or was it all
pretty It was matched? All pretty much the same. There was a lot, there were more students who drove in, but there were many students who lived around the apartments just like now. Pretty much the same. This area itself hasn't changed much, but once you, I would say, hit Canfield with all the stores and stuff now, that's where it, all the commercial spaces has really changed the neighborhood recently. Mm-hmm. But before, there were students, you know, I lived on Hancock in a couple of different buildings, and we would just walk to school. And there were a lot of students like that, but mostly it was students coming in from the suburbs.
Okay. So it was the community involved in, like, the demonstrations and stuff that you talked about?
Wayne State was totally, a lot of the marches would start at Wayne State and go down to, you know, downtown, down by, all the way down to Jefferson and rally there. What's now that, not Ford Field. Do you know the name of the, it has, do you know where the Fist is? And there's that park right on the river across from that.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of the name right now.
Yeah, it's where the Jazz Fest is and mm-hmm. stuff. Anyway, so the marches would go all the way down there. It's about a 2-mile walk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then, why did you leave the Cass Corridor?
I just like to move around a lot. While I was living in the corridor, I would move. I would stay a year in one place and then move somewhere else, and just because I like to move. Mm-hmm. And I lived in other places around the city. Then I was married. We got married in 1983, and we moved to Lansing as a family for about 12 years, and then I moved back. And I also want to, so I moved back in 2003. So I moved back because I was feeling nostalgic about Detroit, and I always liked this neighborhood. So I moved back and bought a house here.
So then when you lived in Lansing, when you told people that you had lived in the Cass Corridor, what was their reaction?
They thought I was pretty tough, you know? Yeah. Because it had a reputation of being, you know, a tough urban city, which it was. So, any time I would be traveling and I felt, like, a little uneasy around, you know, if I felt like I was in danger, I would just say something like, yeah, well, I'm from Detroit, and people would just, like, back off, you know, like, the guys would leave you alone and stuff if mm-hmm. you said you're from Detroit, because they probably thought you had a gun or so, I don't know. But it had that reputation as, it was murder capital for at least a couple of years, mm-hmm. so it had this really rough kind of reputation.
Yeah, and so that was the whole city and not just this area that you would tell people that?
Yeah, I would just say it's from Detroit. I wouldn't say it's from the Cass Corridor, because they wouldn't know what that was.
Okay.
Outside of Detroit. And I went to Wayne State in grad school, too, in the art department from 92 to 95. So I would drive from Lansing here and then, you know, commute.
Okay. And so you talked about this, that you said you came back in 2003 just because you missed mm-hmm. the area?
Yeah, my kids had graduated from high school, and then they were going to college. So and I'd already been divorced. We got divorced. I'd been divorced for about 10 years. So I was free to go wherever I wanted. So initially, I rented studio space in Eastern Market for 2 years to see whether I wanted to stay in Detroit, and I did want to stay in Detroit, so then I bought the house over on Calumet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what changes were the most encouraging to see?
Encouraging?
Yeah.
Okay, encouraging. The safety, I think, has improved, but the campus itself and the surrounding area, where there's been Wayne State Police, I feel as though I've always felt safe on campus or in the surrounding area that they cover. So I don't think that has changed much, if at all. But the city itself, or the outlying areas of the Cass Corridor, like when you start going past MLK and Temple in that area, mm-hmm. I see the safety kind of creeping up that way. I feel more comfortable now walking down Alexandrine than I did 5 years ago. I think that would be the encouraging part.
Yeah. Was there anything that you were excited to see? Maybe, like, so encouraging, but, you know, was there something that you came back and thought, this is great?
Oh, when I moved back?
Yeah.
It still pretty much had the same kind of feel to it. It felt pretty much the same when I first moved back. Right now, I think it's safer. But mm-hmm. when I first moved back in 2000, when I bought the house in 2005, the first week I was there, I got broken into 4 times.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, like, oh, what did I get myself into? Why did I buy this house? You know, but the police were all over it. They staked out my house from across the street. And I got a dog, and then all of that stopped. But it lasted for a week of, like, mm-hmm. constantly getting a phone call, you know, like, you have to come home, your house, you know, someone's broken into your house. And I got a call from the police commissioner who said, you know, your name keeps coming across my desk here, you know, so it was reassuring, and it was just, like, more of an annoyance, I guess, because I was pretty used to, you know, it wasn't the first mm-hmm. set of times that I'd been had my house broken into, so it was just really annoying, and they had stole a few things, but nothing of any value. So.
And then, what do you think still needs to happen, or were there changes that you weren't happy to see?
From when I moved back, or yeah. now?
Either.
Now I find it a little annoying to be living here with, things like Shinola. It's just a little, say Shinola, for example, is one of the first businesses that moved in. And I feel it's a bit exploitative of the neighborhood. With the gentrification here in what's now called Midtown, It disrupts the pattern of the neighborhood in a way that it forces people out. I noticed there is a sign right next to Avalon Bakery over there. One of the businesses there has a for rent sign up now. So I immediately thought that they're being squeezed out by the rents are probably going up, and they're being squeezed out. So it happens not only with the business sector, but also with the residents. People are. I'm saying it was safer. It's safer to go over towards Alexandria now than it used to be, and I think that's because a lot of the neighborhood is changing, where it's forcing out residents who've been living here for a long time, and forcing them to find other places to move as the rent increases. So I feel fortunate that I bought my house, mm-hmm. and so I won't have that happen unless my property taxes may go up and that may force me out. So I've, you know, is and that's, you know, gentrification everywhere, I suppose, the bad part about it. I don't feel like I have to look over my shoulder while I'm walking down the street, but is that a good trade-off, you know, to kind of see it become less diverse, becoming more like Ann Arbor? Nothing. No. So that's what I say. So is Shinola. They move in, they bring their business to Detroit, which, okay, that's great. But then, and they, to give back to the community, they open a dog park, right? Which is like, okay, that's nice. But, and I do use it, my dog loves the dog park. But the people who live next to the dog park, I have a friend who lived in that building. He works at the Detroit Film Theater, and he's lived there for like 30 years or something. And he's been a fixture in the neighborhood. He had to move because the dogs were barking and it was disruptive. So I'm all for change, and I have a friend who moved from Brooklyn, New York here, and when I first met her, I was really, you know, combative with her, like, why are you moving here? You know, it's like, and she was saying, well, things are going to change in Detroit. would you rather see it change this way, or would you rather see it become, like, you know, super corporate, or, do you know what I mean? It's like, so I suppose it's not horrible, the changes, but it could be worse. It's just a little disruptive and kind of annoying.
So what do you think created the change in the neighborhood? You talked about Shinola moving in, but were there other things that you think helped create this change?
Well, I think Detroit has always had super low rent, right, because it's been, because people haven't had money to pay anything more. So with a low rent, it attracts artists, musicians, you know, more of the creative people, because they normally don't have a lot of money. So you have all that going on. You have this creative hub going on. And then, so then the real estate follows that, right? Just like it's kind of a Soho effect, where Soho in New York used to be really shabby, and not shabby chic, just like shabby. And then, so the artists were living there, and then the real estate follows the artists, right? So, and then the artists get kicked out, and, you know, the last I heard they were in Chelsea, and then they've gotten kicked out of, you know, rents have gone up in Chelsea. So the same thing's happening here, with because the rent is so cheap, something, a company like Shinola can come in and buy a building for super cheap, and set up shop and have cheap labor around. I don't know how much they pay, to be fair, but they can move in because the property value is so low, create a hype and the buzz, and then that attracts more of that kind of business. So I think initially it's the cheap rent. And then, because as that was happening, suburban people I would talk to, oh, I'm afraid to go to Detroit. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing suburbanites with, like, expensive shoes on at the dog park. I'm like, ew. Dog park has AstroTurf. It's kind of nasty. So then I see suburbanites coming to the dog park, and it's like, I guess they're not afraid to come to the neighborhood anymore. So now my painting studio is in Highland Park, and I'm forecasting that Highland Park will be the next midtown, because you're going to have the M1 rail go right down Woodward. There's people from New York buying up property in Highland Park and, you know, turning that into studio space. So that's my prediction, is that Highland Park will be the next midtown.
And when you say midtown, do you mean something separate from Cass Corridor?
Yeah, how I see the Cass Corridor and midtown, I see it as one and the same. Or that midtown used to be the Cass Corridor, and Cass Corridor is now midtown. It has kind of the same boundaries, right, as far as I know.
So do you think that means that Cass Corridor is kind of disappearing and midtown is taking over, or do you think that they can live synonymously?
I think that Cass Corridor is pretty much a past. And the term Cass Corridor always had this dangerous, sort of scary, when I lived here in the 70s, there were prostitutes walking up and down the street outside of campus. And it was a little scarier to go out, especially at night. We would drive everywhere. You had to have a car down here. You couldn't walk like you walk now. It's become more walkable. But you would never, like, you would walk to school, but you would never walk to a club, or even if it were a block away, you would drive your car and get as close as you could to your location, because you didn't want to be out walking around. It was too dangerous. So that was the connotation of the Cass Corridor, was it was this dangerous, scary place. And so to change that feel of the Cass, that name, that brand, Midtown was, Cass Corridor was given the name Midtown. That's how I understand it. So now, I used to live in the Cass Corridor. I'm in the same house, but now I live in Midtown. And it has kind of the same boundaries. Maybe it goes up to Woodward now. I'm sure it does. Woodward, and maybe, I think that might be the eastern boundary. Not quite sure. So it may extend out a little bit further. Technically, I know that Woodbridge is not part of Midtown. And so it's basically the same boundaries, but just has been rebranded as Midtown instead of the Cass Corridor.
When did that change happen? When did you start hearing that switch?
I would say it was after I moved here, so between maybe 5-6 years ago, I started hearing it more and more. It's been gradual. And we used to mock the name Midtown, like, oh, ha, 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 Midtown, whatever. And then, but now it's like I'm even using it. It's sort of gradually crept into the vocabulary.
So when you say you've been using it, do you start telling people you identify as someone from Midtown, or do you still identify as a Cass Corridor resident?
When people ask me where I live, I tell them I live near Wayne State, because that's more... That's avoiding the whole thing. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to say Cass Corridor, because that sounds like, I don't know, it sounds pretentious in a way, or dating myself maybe. And Midtown, I say still, I mean, I use it, but it's like, I don't want to, I cringe a little bit when I use it, so I just say I live near Wayne State to avoid the whole thing.
Yeah. That works. And so what are the greatest needs in the community now?
I don't know. We have pretty much everything now. We have a grocery store. We have Whole Foods. At first, I balked at that, too. Whole Foods. But Whole Foods in the neighborhood is, they're subsidized by the state. So the prices are pretty reasonable, and they do have fresh produce and you know, at a reasonable price. So I do shop there. So we have the grocery store that we needed for a long time. We don't need the new leather store. That's could have been another market or something. There's a new leather store called Will's that, you know, come on. With expensive leather goods. I think that's how they're branding themselves. Like, I think they use the word expensive. It's just... So, what do we need? We have plenty of restaurants. It's pretty safe right now. We have a dog park. The sense of community is kind of not so much there anymore. So I could say... more of that, maybe more diversity, bring the diversity back. And I have housing across from my house. There's subsidized housing, so that's still primarily black. In fact, it's all black, so I appreciate that. There's a few places like that. They've been there since the 70s, though, when those townhouses were built in the 70s, and it's always been subsidized. So I would like to see more of that in the neighborhood, to keep a diversity so that it doesn't completely turn into Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is Detroit, so I don't want Detroit to change so much that it loses its identity, or the, you know, it's going to lose it to some extent, I'm sure, but I don't know.
Yeah. And so what were the greatest needs in the community when you lived here before, or even when you moved back?
A grocery store was the main, I think, was the main thing, because it was always, my immediate neighborhood, it was always safe, or I felt safe. But there was, to go grocery shopping, you would have to go to the suburbs to go grocery shopping. And so having Whole Foods move in, I would say, really helped the neighborhood a lot.
Yeah, where did you used to go to, like, which suburb would you go to buy groceries?
Usually, I used to paint houses, so wherever my clients were, there'd always be a Myers or Kroger's or something like that. Usually, it would be where, depending on where I was working, and then I could stop there on my way home and pick up groceries. If I weren't out in the suburbs, then I would stop at well, the Myers at 8 Mile wasn't open yet. So I'd have to go to the Myers. There's a Myers out in Inkster, maybe, or Livonia, on Middle Belt Road. There's a Myers in Roseville. I mean, I had to travel to go to, like, a big grocery store to buy all the, you know, your, all the stuff that you need.
Yeah.
But there was no place. Every once in a while, there would be a pop, a mom-and-pop kind of shop that would open up, and it wouldn't last very long. That would have, there was one on Woodward for, they might have lasted a year or two, and then they closed down, and they sold fresh produce and sandwiches and stuff. You know, they make sandwiches from the produce, kind of like Goodwill's. Goodwill's really helped out before Whole Foods moved in. And of course, there's always Eastern Market. You could go there for on Saturdays, but you couldn't buy paper, you know, toilet paper or stuff.
Yeah.
And there was another place on Woodward that got shut out by Whole Foods, I think. A Ye Olde Butcher Market that had fresh produce and a full grocery line. So when they opened up, I would go there. And then Whole Foods up opened up shortly after that. And then there went Ye Olde Butcher Shop, which was a single store owned by, you know, like one guy. And then that went under because of Whole Foods. So it's kind of like a symbol or a metaphor or something of, you know, what's happening to the whole neighborhood. I mean, and now I shop at Whole Foods. So, you know, it's a big corporation or real estate can come in and take advantage of the low rent and the amount of people that are here and kind of capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there have been more changes between when you moved back and now, or in that time that you were gone?
Oh, when I moved back, I think more changes happened here in the last 3 years than anything I've seen before. It was coming back. I bought the house in 2005, and it was getting better and better. You'd start hearing about Midtown, and then there was that real estate where everything kind of fell. That recession in 2008, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so Midtown was just coming around. You know, the townhouses on Third were being built over by Canfield, and they were pretty nice looking. And so you'd see little bits and pieces here that it was making, that was going to come back. And then 2008, the recession hit, and then it all went downhill. And so in the last 3 years, I'd say I'm seeing huge changes. With things being built and businesses coming in, and oh, another restaurant, you know, with lines at the door, you know, it's, I don't know. And the museum has changed a lot. The Detroit Institute of Arts has changed a lot. It used to be real low key, meant for, you know, everyone, of course, was welcome. It was free admittance, it was always free. And you could put in a donation if you wanted to when you walked in, but there was never any, it was always free. And they'd have these huge exhibits of, you know, Monet, you know, like a Monet exhibit, like Blockbuster kind of things. But otherwise, it was just very low-key. The neighborhood people would go in and hang out there, too, and back in the 70s. And now they're pushing more and more to get more and more people to come in and attendance and, you know, working the millage and... so that has changed too. It's not like I wouldn't go there just to hang out anymore. You know, it's too, I don't know. Even that's become a little bit commercialized, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make it art understandable for everyone because they don't get that in the schools anymore too much. So reaching out to everyone, it's almost like kind of dumbing it down for the public, but I think in some regard that's even more denigrating than just having it open and come in and look at the art. Now it's come in and we're going to interpret the art for you and put a big sign up next to the Van Gogh to tell you what this painting is about, rather than just letting people come in and look at the paintings and figure it out for themselves. So in a way, the trying to reach out to the public is more snobby than just letting people come in and if they want to, rather than trying to reach out so much and pull people in, you must come in. I don't know.
Do you think the closeness of the DIA, do you think that that influenced the art community that was here?
I think it used to, and it was more the community influencing the museum. Like in the 80s, there was a group, if you go to the Tribes of the Cass Corridor, there's a website that has a lot of history of the Cass Corridor. There was a guy named Stephen Goodfellow who spearheaded this this push to get the museum to show Michigan artists or Detroit artists, because there were a lot of Detroit artists back then, good artists. And so that there was a push towards, it was more when people would gather together or get together and try to influence change by numbers, like the demonstrations or the marches. It's the same kind of mentality where a group of artists that would get together and sign petitions and gather at the DIA demanding that they show Detroit artists. And not to be like a mausoleum, to be a museum instead of a mausoleum where they showed all dead people.
Yeah.
And so it's more the community attacking the museum. Now it's the other way around. The museum is trying to attract the community. So there was a program called OMAP, Ongoing Michigan Artist Program. And it was a gallery where the gift shop is now. I'm pretty sure that's where it was. And they would show Michigan artists. And that lasted, I don't know how long that lasted, maybe 10 years.
But that's not there anymore?
No. No. And now do you see the community, hey, show some Detroit. Although I do see there are more Detroit artists mingled through the museum. So that's probably how it shifted.
Okay. We've mentioned that there were a lot of artists in this area in the DIA. Who were some of the artists that first inspired you when you moved to the area?
Yeah, some of the good artists I thought that were going on, there were, it was mostly a male, male-dominated. You can go back through the records and look at the shows that were going on at the time at the different galleries, and it would be all guys. Guys. They wouldn't even have a token woman in many of the shows. There were important women that often get overlooked when you're looking back onto the history of the Cass Corridor art. And so the women that were important, Nancy Michnick was very important. She inspired me in my painting classes. She had already moved to California to teach at USC, and then she ended up teaching at Harvard. And now she's back in Detroit for the cheap rent. So Nancy Michnick was a big inspiration to me as a student, and so was Ellen Phelan, who is now in New York City, married to Joel Shapiro, he's more famous than she, because he's a guy, I suppose. There's an opening tonight at Center for Creative Studies for Brenda Goodman. And she's another female artist who left Detroit, probably because, I don't know why. I would imagine that because it was so, but it was like that everywhere, I would have to say. In New York, too, it was all very male-dominated, very macho. But Brenda Goodman left also, but she's having a show tonight at CCS. If you're around, you should check it out. There'll be a lot of people there. So those were the women that had influenced me, mostly Nancy Michnick and Ellen Phelan. Some of the guys I hung out with, I lived with Gordy Newton for several years, and his work is at the museum now. He was pretty big at the time. and Bob Sestak, who still lives in the neighborhood over a block from me. And he's still very active in the community. He has a sculpture park that he developed on the Lodge Freeway over by Alexandrine and the Lodge. Trying to think, who else did I like? Jim Chatlin, Bradley Jones. These were all people a little bit older than me. And then my friends that I was hanging out with, Tricia Soderberg is still actively painting. Ruth Goldfaden is teaching art in Detroit public schools. Lila Kadage is also teaching in public schools and still painting. She has a show up right now in Hamtramck. But those are the people I hung out with and my old circle.
What do you think it was about this community, and maybe it was the rent that you've mentioned before, mm-hmm. but what do you think drew artists to this community?
Yeah, I would say the rent and the camaraderie, because there were other artists here. So, you know, you would hang out with people that you could talk to, like, oh, do you know? You know, you could talk about different artists that no one else would know, mm-hmm. you know, or art school here. It's that building, right? The art building, yeah. I used to take design classes up in this building, and it gets so hot up there in the summer. It still does. Evidently, they don't have air conditioning up there. But Wayne State had a big influence on the art community. The art school was huge back then. It was really big. Now it's probably about half the size. It's still big, and it has national reputation as being a traditional art school, just like most of Wayne State's programs are traditional. Your library science is traditional, right? You mm-hmm. you have books.
Yeah.
So Wayne State had a big influence on the community, and I think that the art students were interested in living in the neighborhood, and so it kind of fed off each other. Like, I started off as a foreign language major and ended up taking an art class as an elective and got kind of pulled into the art department that way, because there was just something, the energy and the creative stuff that was going on, it was just too much of a draw to not get sucked into it for me.
And what does the community have to offer artists now, as opposed to back then when you said that the art department's about half of what it was?
Yeah, I think that in the 80s there was a big shift from the creative element in society more towards making money. That was kind of the shift. So people were starting, I don't know if I want to go to art school. I won't be able to make any money. I guess I'll go to business school because I'll make money. So I think that was kind of a shift. And it was before graphic design was really a viable way to do much, because computers weren't really that useful then. So I think there was a shift away more towards from the, you know, the poetry. There were a lot of poets around here too then. And writers, musicians, of course, we just come out of the Motown era. There's still plenty of musicians around. But I think that's pretty much what it was. Students wanted to have make a living after they were finished with school.
Yeah.
And I waited tables for 10 years during school and after school until I got married. Then when I got divorced, I had my BFA from Wayne, Bachelor of Fine Arts. And so when I got divorced, I waited tables again. And then I came back and got my MFA. Now I'm teaching as an adjunct, which that will never change, because I started, not only is it more difficult to get a full-time position right now, I waited way too long to get into that career path of full-time, trying to get full-time professor job somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing fine the way it is.
Yeah. And are there still artists in this area then?
Oh yeah, there's, it's not like it was where you would, you know, like Sunday brunch, you know, it wasn't really called brunch back then, but Sunday you go to Alvin's, which was a club down at Cass, this this way towards 94. And we would meet down there Sunday and just hang out and have coffee and sandwich. It was a deli too. And just kind of hang out as a community, you know, and you'd sit around and talk about art or whatever, other things people talk about, you mm-hmm. know, their friends or enemies, you know. So there is still, it's not as, it's not as cohesive as it used to be, but I think that's true with your generation too, that aren't you more like on your, you know, socializing on Facebook than, or other social media than face to face, you know. So back then, there, you know, you'd have to actually get together to talk, or you could talk on the phone. But phones were weirder back then too. Like you couldn't just call someone in California; it would cost too much money because they had charges for long distance and stuff. But so usually it was, you would just meet somewhere in the real world.
Who are some of the local artists you work with now that you admire?
Oh, okay. So I would say Bob Sestock is still around. Nancy Michnick, definitely. She came back. I was super happy about that. And I got to meet her and hang out with her. And, you know, we're friends now. And so I'd say she would be still my biggest influence. And she's going to have a show at MOCAD, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Detroit, a big show in the spring, I think it is. So she would be, I would say my friends, Trisha Soderberg is still painting, Lila Kadage. I have studio space, but they're, the guy next to me, Peter Bernal, who just moved here to work at the DIA. He, you know, we're friends. I don't know if his work influences me now. At this point in my life, I pretty much just influence myself. I'm influenced by, at the moment, I'm influenced by photographers, dead photographers, pretty much. And just kind of, however I come across them, as they pop up in my media, I'm like, whoa, I really like that photo. You know, it's a really great photo. And then I'll investigate more about their work. And then I've been painting from photographs, which is new for me in the last 3 years. And I'll either paint from my photographs or from this work that's like, whoa, that really inspires me or really like that. It somehow strikes a chord with me. I want to paint that. So I don't know if we really influence each other in a direct way anymore, like maybe we used to, or at least for me.
Mm-hmm. So has Detroit and the Cass Corridor itself influenced your work? You've mentioned mostly photographs, but are you more influenced by the photographs and the people, or does the area around here influence your work as well?
The environment, I would say the environment has a huge impact on me. Most of my life I've gone through in and out of depression a lot, and I found that when I moved back to Detroit in 2002, when I first moved back to the Eastern Market area, my whole mood just lifted, and I haven't experienced depression since I moved back to Detroit, and I think that, I don't know why, but there's something about this area that, in spite of all its, you know, well, it's not that gritty anymore, but in spite of all that, it makes me somehow feel happy, and I feel maybe it's a familiarity of it, and also the I do like change. I sound like I don't, but I really like change. Like when I walked into Kresge, you know, in that door, which is where I usually would enter, going like, where are the card catalogs? You know, it's like, so just little things like that that change and have kind of I guess it's a gestalt kind of feeling, like, oh, I remember things. When did that building move over here? It would be the same building, but it felt like it was in a different place. So I like memory in that way, and how saying how you remember things, and the image of the memory that you have in your head, and then when you see it in reality, it's like, oh, I guess that building has always been there, even though I remember it being on the other side of the street or something. So it's just kind of, it's kind of weird, but I do like this spot in the world. You know, it's, there's some kind of comfort to me, and I feel like I'm comfortable here, and I guess it feels like home, right? That makes me happy to be here, compared to Lansing, maybe. It's just that comparison, or the contrast to Lansing, but yeah, I like being here.
So are there any particular overarching messages you try to convey with your paintings?
I guess, like many artists, it's a lot about me. They call that navel gazing. And I'm interested in emotion and memory, which is all personal, right? I'm more of, I would say, romanticist than an intellectual. So there are some painters that are intellectual, but I'm more of a, I'm interested in the emotion of what's going on and how the painting, as a painting develops, especially when I'm working with someone else's photograph, I'll see, as I'm painting, I'll see things in it that I may not have seen when I first looked at the photo. There's one painting that I did that was this huge painting, 12 feet in height by 10 feet, and as I'm painting, I'm looking, working with this photograph, there's a door in the background, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about it, but it's like, what's going on beyond that door? And that may have been part of the photographer's original intention. It had kind of this eerie, kind of spooky, the photo was taken in an old Victorian unoccupied house, you know, with kind of crumbling plaster. And so it had this kind of eerie, spooky kind of feel to it. So as I'm painting it, the more I'm painting, the more these emotions are coming out, like, oh, it's kind of scary to, you know, think about what's going on back in the dark recesses of the painting. So it's kind of that kind of a feel going back and forth between me and the work, and how things emerge from the painting as I'm working. It kind of intrigues me.
Yeah. Do you work with any other mediums besides paint?
No, not really. I can sew, but that's not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of painting, or like?
It's oil.
Oils.
Oil painting.
Mm-hmm.
Oil on canvas. Yeah. And so I build my own stretchers and, you know.
Do you have any advice for artists who are just starting out now?
Yeah, I would say go to as many museums and look at as much stuff as you can, and get your art history in place, and because you're going to draw a lot of inspiration from that, from the history of art and what's going on before you and where is art going in the future. And I hope it's not conceptual. a friend of mine who I work at the DIA also, a friend of mine was telling me she just graduated from art school, and she was saying that craft is coming back into the art world now, like the craft of painting or the craft of sculpture. So I was really happy to hear that, because for long last, I remember being in art school in the 70s when conceptualism was just beginning, and I hated it then. And I still, you know, pretty much don't like it. So I was happy to hear about the craft of a discipline coming back. And so painting may be getting a revival. So I'm happy about that. But I would say for students just coming into it, just because you're, otherwise, if you're just like trying to work on your own work constantly, you're just going to lose motivation, I would think. And to just go to other people's studios, see what's going on, go to the art openings, go to the museums for sure, go to the galleries and make your connections, you know, network at the galleries and at the art openings, and just, you know, hang out with your friends wherever that may be. Yeah.
And then do you have any advice for current or future residents of the Cass Corridor or Midtown, whichever name ends up winning?
Okay, what was the beginning of the question?
Do you have any advice for future residents of this area?
Besides stay out. let me think. I guess if it depends on where the people would be moving from. Like, there are a lot of people moving from Brooklyn or New York or wherever. I would say to those people moving in from another cool location like Brooklyn, you know, just to be respectful of what's going on here and not try to, you know, come in and help us. You know, Detroit really doesn't need anyone's help because we've been here for a long time. And so this kind of like coming in and like, oh, we're going to help Detroit. It's really, you know, I don't know, if they can just come in and be respectful, you know, and just be cool. And, you know, it's just, but if they're coming from the suburbs, or I came from the suburbs, right? I don't know. It just, you don't have to, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I guess just be observant and respectful of what's going on, and be aware that people are being pushed out of the neighborhood, people who have lived here for a long time because they can't afford the rent anymore. So just be respectful of that, and maybe, you know, wherever they're moving. Oh, I know a lot of people from Brooklyn are moving over on the east side, over by Belle Isle, and Jefferson Chalmers, a really rough, it used to be a really rough neighborhood. And I was just told that they, some people from Brooklyn are moving in there buying cheap houses, right? You can buy a house for, or you could have bought a house for $5,000 or $6,000 a few years ago, and buying the houses and then just sitting on them and thinking like, oh, well, maybe someday I'll want to move there. So you have people from out of town buying houses and just letting them be vacant. That's not helping anyone either. So it's just a tricky, it's a balancing act. Yeah, you know, move to Detroit, but, you know, try to fit in, you know, and don't think that, you know, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that.
That's okay. Do you have any other thoughts that you have about the Cass Corridor?
I think we've covered a lot.
Yeah, we did. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you. That was a good interview. And it was a good interview in that you pulled out a lot of things that I, you know, I'd forgotten about, or you made it easy to talk to. So
oh, good.
I would say
thank you.
That was really good. Yeah, thanks.